Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 KOGO. I'm Scott Lewis, the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice of San Diego. I'm joined, as always, by the managing editor, Andrea Lopez Villafaña. What's up, Lopez?
Hey, Lewis. I'd like to throw in that I've got a new title today as well. I'm a tía.
Oh, so, congratulations.
Hey, congratulations.
As we record on Thursday, January 11th, my niece should be coming into this world.
Oh, it hasn't happened.
No. I think it's happening. I think it's happening as we speak.
You can't do it until after.
She's a tía and waiting.
It's happening now.
No, stop. It has
she's
to happen.
She's got the epidural and everything.
Well, that's sorry.
She's in like the liminal space of tía-ship.
Yeah.
You're not a tía
By the time
yet.
We exit this room, by the time this podcast publishes,
oh, you don't
baby
know.
Will be here.
It could be a whole weekend.
Oh, my.
And also joining us is Jacob McWinney. What's up, Jacob?
This was a much better introduction than the first time you tried it.
Yeah, thank you. Coming up on the show this week, the state of the city is stronger every day, according to Mayor Todd Gloria, that is, in his annual address, the state of the city. Gloria tried to show strong numbers across the big issues in the city, from homelessness, housing, and infrastructure, and he was super tough on crime. Guy does not like crime. Wanted to make that get across.
He does not like plexiglass either.
Yeah, come on. We'll get into our favorite moments from the big speech. Also, Lincoln High School is seeing test scores go down while graduation rates go up. Jacob will explain how those things can work. And there are student school board members, not just the elected adults. There's students, and they want not only to get paid, which they are getting paid now, but also to vote on things, and we're going to talk about that. It's going to be a good show. Stay with us.
But first, our next live podcast is on the books. We'll be at Modern Times in Point Loma on February 8th. There will be great food, great beer, a great show to celebrate Voice of San Diego's 19th anniversary. It will be one of our biggest shows ever. You can get your tickets now at vosd.org/events.
Good God, 19 years? That's
you feel super old now?
Is that real?
Yeah, that's what it says in the script.
You know,
we were 18 last year.
Apparently, Voice of San Diego is an Aquarius.
We do have a special member promo happening for the event. If you donate $65 or more, you're welcome to donate more, you become a member and you get a free mug or glass. Who doesn't love free stuff? And free entry to Brews and News. Again, that's vosd.org/events. Links are in the show notes. We'll see you there.
All right, I have an update before we get into some stuff. The Sunbreak Ranch guys have now followed up with an update. They faced a kind of barrage of mean media folks like me, you know, pointing some things out, the logical flaws of their plan to put people into a remote camp in a remote area.
Sometimes you can say the truth in a mean way, though.
Yeah, and so they... Yeah.
When he criticized your horoscope thing.
Remember, I had the news a couple weeks ago that Brown Field, where they wanted to put the place, so they thought about doing Miramar. This, again, is a big camp where they would concentrate the homeless population, provide services for them, and then they were going to give them a daily shuttle if they wanted to come back. Now, I had a few issues, obviously, like if people didn't want to go there, it seems like they would have to, you know, get more and more sort of violent to get them there. Mm-hmm. Felt like it was just a real bad vibe around this thing. But they also, the Marine Corps was like, no, you can't put it here. And then I broke the news that their other idea to put it in Brown Field, the FAA said, no, you can't at all do that. Not only did we give this land to the city based on some certain understandings about how it would be used for flight and stuff, but also you can't have residents in those areas, especially vulnerable homeless individuals. So they have come now with a response. Their idea is to actually, they're responding to the FAA's concern. They're saying basically the city should just shut down Brownfield, the flight operations going on there, just shut them down. That way the FAA wouldn't be involved. Now, as far as the facilities, what they would build, the camp, that this would still be in the hands of the U.S. Marines. Pitch, the idea is to pitch management of the U.S. Marines and FEMA to get them to build the modular military base like facility. So that's their, again, this is their emergency plan that they would do immediately. Like they say you could do this now to build this facility.
I'm just imagining them doing like a Shark Tank, but with homeless housing to FEMA and the Marines.
Right. They said they were going to increase the shuttles. So they're going to do more shuttles that they would say, like, so that you don't have to feel like you're trapped there.
So the fake thing now has more transportation. That's good.
Yes. So on the question of how they would get people there, they say this. They say, quote, instruct the police and sheriff to begin phasing out homelessness on the streets, canyons, and public parks, and relocate those who are unsheltered to Sunbreak Ranch. For those persons, this is right at the question that we've all had about what about the people who don't want to go.
Yeah.
For those persons not willing to go to Sunbreak, bus tickets to their home city will be provided. Whether their home is LA, Denver, New York City, or otherwise, we'll help them get to where their family and friend support network exists. So now, just to be clear, there is already a bunch of programs that'll give you a ticket to get out of here. That's a very popular thing for like some agencies to do, to, you know, allow people to go, because what better way to handle homelessness than to get them on a bus and get out of here. Mm-hmm. But that's their main response to the one big concern about what if people don't want to go to this place. And their answer is they will go, or they'll take a bus out of town. And again, that just sort of reinforces, like, okay, what are you going to do to them to compel them to go to this place?
Well, also, I mean, it does not answer the third very likely possibility, which is, I don't want to go to Sunbreak Ranch. I don't want to get on a bus and leave San Diego. What do they do then?
That's what I mean. Like, yeah. Like, they're basically saying, like, well, they're going to do that. Mm-hmm. Or we're going to do something to them to make them have to go there. I don't know there's a hole in the logic there.
Yeah.
So basically they're basically saying, like, we're just going to take over this brownfield. We're going to get all the hospitals. We're going to get all the military. We're going to get all the city and county. We're going to get everybody to pitch in to do this. This is much better than H barracks because people don't like them near H barracks. And guess what? Here's the quote. H barracks proposal is blatantly seeking a path of extreme resistance and opposition. Brown Field, on the other hand, doesn't have any of those, quote, disqualifying attributes. So because nobody's against it except the federal government, then it's not disqualifying.
Yeah.
And so again, it just reveals that their real dream is to just ship people out into the county, and they it's just it's so interesting that this has so much traction. So this was written by George Mullen, and we got a little bit more information about him. Quote: George Mullen is a barbed wire artist.
What is that? That's actually a form of art that I'm very passionate about.
Yeah,
I must say, you know, and I really wish another thing I'm very passionate about, as you guys may already know, is vexillology, which is the study of flags.
Yes,
and I would just deeply, I just wish there was some artist out there that would meld these two passions of mine, barbed wire art and vexillology or flags. And unfortunately,
well, Jacob, I have just some great news for you. George has a whole barbed wire making flags thing. So it's flags made out of a canvas, but with barbed wire.
I'm blown away.
Andrea, you and I attended the State of the City address. It's kind of our thing now, right?
It is. Every year. It's our thing, yeah.
I enjoy it. Seeing all the people.
We were the unofficial welcoming.
Yeah, we were forced into the aisle, so people had to walk past us and either avoid us or engage.
Yes, with the most chose to engage. Some chose to avoid. you know who you are.
So I got to say, this State of the City, I've been to many of them now over these 19 years. Yeah. And this was the best as far as the coordination between the screen behind the man and the man's speech.
Mm-hmm.
The PowerPoint was
on
excellent.
Point.
The choreography.
It was reactive.
It was PowerPoint choreography.
Yeah.
And it was perfectly done. There was one moment where he's like, we got to do something about the housing situation. We got to build more homes. And then as he says it, it's like, bam, bam, bam.
How long do you think they spent rehearsing that?
That's what I want to say. When that, I can't help but picture that when they pulled that off, when it was build more homes, I can picture these two staffers sitting in the little room that had pushed the buttons, and they're like giving each other fives, like, yeah, yeah, man, we nailed it.
We were sitting behind those guys.
Yeah.
Imagine accidentally pressing the click button one too many times and you pass the build more homes and you just totally like.
No, they nailed that. That was good.
It was a good show.
I got to say, this was the most alive I've ever seen Todd Gloria. I thought he's tapped into something that he hadn't before. There was a verve, a joie de vivre that I hadn't seen before. And, you know, it was a pretty good version of this stuff. Now we'll go about doing what we do and poking apart some of it. But let's get that on the record. And there was no part of it that was that he was more animated about than the sort of polar presentation he made, right? Which was A, everything is awesome.
We've accomplished a lot.
Yeah. And B, we gotta get rid of the bad people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we gotta do things to stop the bad people.
That sounds like a little kid's version of how they would explain Law and Order.
That's what it was. But those were the vibes of the speech, right?
Those are the vibes. I got to say, like, of all the things, you know, we talk about and predict and we expect, I did not expect mention of Target and plexiglass and the toothpaste that it, you know, prevents you from just grabbing.
Well, let's get into that. So probably the biggest news of the night, in our opinion, my opinion, was that he has taken a sort of new stand, at least from what I know about him, about Proposition 47. Now, remember, Proposition 47 was the law that was an initiative, so passed by the public. So to do anything about it, you have to have another public vote about it. So it was supported by former police chief Bill Lansdowne. And it was the idea, remember back several years ago, the prisons were overcrowded. There was a big move against mass incarceration. And the idea was to take some of these low-level offenses, turn them from felonies to misdemeanors, use some of the savings from putting people in jail to fund community programs and otherwise change the cycle of criminality mm-hmm. into something better. Now, since then, this is what Todd Gloria's new take is about what's happened.
However, since it's been implemented, we have seen criminals exploit these reforms, leading to organized networks of career thieves ransacking stores with little to no consequence. These are not crimes of poverty. These are criminal enterprises gaming the limits set under Prop 47 and making a cottage industry out of retail theft. And while San Diego hasn't been hit as hard by these theft rings as other California cities, we're all still paying the price, both at the cash register and in time and convenience. You shouldn't have to flag down a Target employee to unlock a plexiglass cabinet just so you can get a tube of toothpaste. We should be.
You got to be able to grab your toothpaste. I haven't seen the toothpaste behind a wall. Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at the Target in Mission Valley.
Okay.
It's toothpaste, deodorant, like shaving stuff.
Oh, okay.
You know, which medicine? It does seem to me like those are basic necessities, and if somebody is stealing because of poverty, that's the kind of stuff
they would steal. Yeah, 100%.
So the Republicans, the conservatives in California, have been making this basic argument for now 10 years.
Yes.
And their point, it's been like a shorthand for how badly things have gone under progressive leadership in the state, that we were lenient on criminals. We don't really prosecute these low-level crimes, and thus this pervasive open-air drug markets and just lawlessness has occurred. It's like the core Republican argument right now about yeah. California, uh-huh. right? And so that's what's so interesting about him saying that is that mm-hmm. he's now part of that.
I mean, and it's not only Republicans. Like, you know, I've been to lots of community meetings, and it's certainly something that police officers always bring up, even community members themselves, the way it does translate, like the thing that, you know, the normies absorb in their brain.
Right.
It's like Prop 47 has just made it so that if there's somebody smoking crack on the sidewalk and I'm a police officer, there's absolutely nothing I can do about that. And that's the situation that we're in. I mean, we wrote about in the morning report, the El Cajon Police Department released a documentary on, you know, what it's like for their officers who go out and try to, you know, offer services to homeless individuals. And one of the police officers told Fox 5, you know, that Prop 47 has really just like stopped them from or prevented them from doing their jobs.
That's been the core argument. Now, there's a lot of people who say, well, you can still prosecute misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can like there's that's still a crime.
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
can. And so there's been this disconnect that I've honestly never reconciled. We've tried to research it. We've talked to judges and everything. What is the disconnect between you can still prosecute them, but they're not? Because they're just like, well, it's a waste of time. They're just going to go and get their wrist slapped or something. But what Gloria went even further and said that he will now support any initiative that would reform this. And I've heard that the California Retailers Association are putting together a ballot initiative that would change Prop 47. Hmm. The governor has put forward his own proposals that would come short of actually changing Prop 47, but would change some other angles that are similar. So this was a big thing for him to come up, but I think it has the, like you, I think you said Republicans mm-hmm. and others have used this, but him and others like him, if they start embracing it, that could be interesting.
Yeah. Like if this is a thing that a certain specific group, Republicans, police officers, whoever, they've used this to say, look at how crappy the situation is. It's because of this thing. And look at where we're at because of this thing. And if then you have other people from the other side, Democrats or whatever, supporting and saying, you're right. Yeah, let's get rid of this thing. And so then you get rid of the thing. It's like, what can you point to say, this is why things are so crappy?
Yeah, if things
you
don't,
lose your thing.
If things don't immediately improve, then they'll have to be a shorthand for something else. It's
yeah.
like they've leaned on it so much now that if it's taken away, it'll be really interesting to see what they... I'm sure they'll be able to find something
yeah.
else. But yeah, it was a really interesting moment for him. And that was clearly what he was most animated by. But it kind of contrasted with the other main theme of the speech, which is like, we are cooking at the city of San Diego.
Yeah.
We are doing some great stuff. Like, it was just a, the first, what, 30, 20 minutes
mm-hmm.
was just a stream of how great he and his staff and the employees underneath them have been, right?
Yeah, potholes filled.
Yeah, let's get into that. So this came out, this was one of his points about the streets.
In 2023, our crews filled 61,305 potholes, a 94% increase Woo-hoo! Over the prior year, and an astonishing 122% increase over 2021. Absolutely incredible.
It's really funny to me to imagine, like, a street worker just checking off on a piece of paper, all right, another pothole today.
And that was 60,000.
They tally them all up at the end of the day, you know?
I got to say, like, we talk about how sometimes with these types of speeches, it's easy to throw out a stat, but if you don't have the thing to compare it to, then, like, it's just kind of a stat.
Yeah, I
got
to give a shout out to Andy Keats for that. Yes. I think his one of his foundational observations was, like, when you have these numbers
mm-hmm.
alone, like, they sound big, but is it big? Like,
yeah.
How many potholes are there? If there's 70,000 potholes and you filled 61,000 of them, great job. But if there's 1,000,000 of them and you filled 61,000 of them, then that's not enough.
Yeah.
I would also like to know the specifications of a pothole.
Well, okay,
what qualifies as a pothole? How big does it have to be? Are they just like going around and dropping a little bit of like
slurry
seal? It's like
porn. You know it when you see it.
Okay.
So after the speech, I saw this Instagram post by the city of San Diego, and they did a reel with a city employee who is in charge of, you know, filling the potholes and stuff. And he's just kind of talking, and he's like, you know, we filled this many potholes, and he's like, but like San Diego had an irregular, really rainy season, so there was just more potholes. And I was like, wait, so you're saying like there was just more potholes and that's why you filled more potholes? Or I don't know.
Yeah.
Stats.
And then there's a lot of potholes out there still. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you can drive on some streets. Now, that's the other thing he did. He listed a bunch of streets with it. He was like, and then Claremont Mesa Boulevard and Torrey Pines.
That was, yeah,
I was getting out of breath just listening to
him. It was a great moment, but yeah, it was like, there's a lot of streets. I don't know. So about that, one of the things we talked about, the same thing last year about this, like, numbers that kind of without context, you don't know. So this time he gave an update. Last year he said like, we got 5,000 housing permits. And it took us like a month for some reason to look at that number and see if it was good. And the number was like mediocre for many years, like 5,000. Again, sounds like a lot. That's 5,000 things happening, which is more than zero. But, you know, in the whole context of the history of San Diego, wasn't that many housing permits. Yeah. So he had an update to that.
All in all, based on our preliminary calculations, the city of San Diego last year issued roughly 8,000 new housing permits, an impressive increase of more than 50% over the 5,300 homes we permitted in 2022. Amazing. And we're not done yet. I intend to build on that progress. Today, I have signed a new executive order requiring permit applications that fall under our Complete Communities program to be reviewed and permitted within 30 days.
You gotta be hardcore to cheer permits.
Like, you know, I will say, I was just thinking about this. It's hard to not like clap when you hear other people clapping. I almost just instantaneously burst out into applause just hearing them clap.
Yeah.
It's infectious. It's like a yawn.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's like 8,000 per... Hell yeah! Woo! Let's go!
You're not as miserable as we are, Jacob.
Yeah.
I just sat there. What about employee morale?
Another big applause line was that the employees are less miserable.
Employees are happy.
Well, it was funny because you said this is the first year, right?
The first year when they did a survey where they're not miserable in a while. Like,
that's very, it makes me worry for all the previous
and then, fantastic.
But then he said that they had a job fair, right? And they expected like 300 people are going to come and ask for jobs. And really it was like 3,000 people that came to this job fair. Like, is it because they want to work at the city or because they need a job?
Well, again, it was another thing. There was a whole bunch of stuff about how attractive the place is to work, how good things are going, how many permits are going out, how many roads are getting paved, all of this stuff lining up together. But it's hard because the place is still kind of a mess, right? Like walking there from our office, which isn't far away, like there was a lot of people struggling on the streets and in between there. And, you know, just a couple weeks.
The streets they're struggling on probably look a lot better.
Not really. And not at all, actually. And, you know, I 2 weeks ago, we were cleaning up the softball fields, you know, and there was a, you know, there was a big mess in one of the dugouts, and I sweep out there, and there was a glass pipe, and, you know, it was a little sharp edge. I'm like, boy, I'm glad, you know, kid didn't pick this up, and we take care of it.
Yeah.
And then it was, you walked over, and there was a Rob Field is where they keep all the Christmas trees, where you can dump them, you know, and they'll be recycled. And there was a whole bunch that had been pulled over by the snack shack. And we were like, why are they over there? And then we looked and he said, the people were burning them because it was so cold. Like they were burning them to stay warm. And it's just like, oh, this is just the bathrooms and public areas are still just horrific. Like it's just, there's a lot of streets that are kind of a mess. And it's just, it's like, it's hard to listen to somebody so positive and full of all this like great feeling about the city. And I think there are legitimate accomplishments going on. I think compared to last year, he has taken an approach that really is making a dent, I think, in a way that wasn't before in at least the homelessness crisis. But it's bad out there. And I don't know that the speech like really matched how bad it is with the recognition of how bad it is, right? Mm-hmm. It would be easy to leave that thinking things are going well and then just be confronted with, oh yeah, like.
Well, how much of the dent that's being made do you think is due to just an increased feeling of urgency, and how much is due to this change in tactics, which as we've talked ad nauseum about, has been much more of an enforcement sort of style, much more of this, as we heard in the State of the City, much more of this law and order, you know, tough on crime sort of thing that was really uncharacteristic for Todd for many years.
Well, he did the same thing he did last year, which was homelessness is horrible. We sympathize with you, but you can't, if there is an option or a home, if there's a shelter option, you cannot be on the street anymore. And he made that point. Like that was another one of his like really into that moment, you know, moments. And I think that they did set up safe camping spots in Balboa Park, and those are almost filled. And that does mean that people have shifted where they were to there. I think there's more of that sort of thing going on. And I think he pointed out, look, we've only arrested one person under this law. By the way, I'd like to hear that story. We might look into that. Like, who was the one person that actually ended up getting arrested?
That would be really interesting, yeah.
And then hundreds, though, have, because of the law, been encouraged and taken shelter. So there's probably something going along with that. And he pointed out 60% fewer tents downtown, according to the Downtown Partnership Census. Now, that's a census that was skyrocketing after his taking office. And so now coming down 60%, that's not nothing. Like, obviously, there's something going on there. Now, whether they're just dispersing and hiding in canyons more, or whether they really are finding shelter or not, that's a huge part of this whole thing. So I do think there has been a shift. Whether it's enough, whether it does meet the urgency that I would kind of say needs to be done or something, I'm not sure. But there was a shift. It felt different this year.
You know, there was one interesting moment for me where Todd Gloria mentioned that they had more than doubled shelter capacity.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting because at the end of that sentence, he said, since April 1st, you know, 2021, which, as we know from our Will Huntsbury's reporting, was this moment that he had selected in the past when touting how much shelter they'd created, specifically because at that moment, shelter capacity was at sort of this artificial low because so much of it was closed over the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it is interesting, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, Andy's insight about about numbers out of context don't mean anything is present in that sort of statistic, in that fact, right? So much of this are just numbers. And without that context, you might as well be speaking Latin.
Right. You want to, and it was funny. We were walking back from the speech, and I was making that point, and I was like, you really can't do that if you're touting. And then I realized, like, I do it all the time. Like, we raised $300,000, and everybody's like, okay, well, how much did you need? And well, I needed $3 million or something. It's like, and it's a natural thing to do, to just tout all the things you have done and not really focus on if there's 600 miles of roads that they've paved or fixed. They say, well, how many miles went bad, right? Or how many more miles are there in the city? It's just not easy for us to comprehend that. And that's a feature of the way he talks and presents things, but it's also where we could do some digging.
It's the state of the city.
Well,
you don't start with
I don't
dark,
go to
scary stuff.
I don't go to the member coffee and talk about,
well,
you know,
things are
this is a rough week.
Yeah.
he's trying to be a cheerleader for the city, and it's hard to do that when you go up and say, we have dealt with 5% of the bad roads in this city. Come on, guys. Yeah. Let's do it.
On the other hand, like, I want a little spice. I mean, I got some spice, I think, this year, more than last year. With the, you know, his position on Prop 47, but I don't know, I'm just like hungry for some spice.
I think the most spicy, and this is an old theme of mine, but the most spicy thing you can do sometimes is like show a little bit of vulnerability, show that like a little 100%. Bit that you did, that you don't feel good about something you did, but you're working to redeem this or that, or that this didn't work very well, but we're going to do that. You know, it's like, that's where people come along, and I don't know why people don't tap into that more often, because that would be fun. That would be a guy that you can trust a little bit. Speaking of not wanting to show vulnerability, the San Diego Unified School District has never been one to really talk about things that are going wrong. And they're always excited to talk about things that are going right, like graduation rates.
Graduation rates are going pretty right now.
Yeah, graduation rates are going well. We once quoted and talked a lot about Cindy Martin, the former superintendent of San Diego Unified, who said, what's happening at Lincoln High School is at the heart of the struggle in America. When we get Lincoln right, we get America right. Now, you did a story this week sort of checking in on things there. And there was a really interesting juxtaposition of data. What was it?
Yeah. So, you know, I've long been interested in Lincoln, not only because it's a story that it's a school that has just a really storied past, is incredibly important to the community, but also, I mean, Cindy Martin isn't entirely wrong. Education is rife with these sorts of inequalities and inequities that we see across society. That being said, I mean, it's still a hilarious quote, because it takes like all personal responsibility out of it as an educator and as an administrator. But that being said, you know, even my grandpa went to Lincoln, you know, so I do care about this school, and especially schools that are having a hard time. They are the ones that we most need to check in on. So I did some checking in on it. What I saw was pretty distressing. You know, if you just look at test scores, which, you know, many educators have a million and one reasons why you shouldn't pay attention to test scores, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, it's one of the only kind of solid metrics that we have to understand what kids, you know, how kids are learning. And what we saw there is not great. So for the past 2 years, about 3% of Lincoln's juniors, only juniors take state standardized tests, met state math standards. That comes out to about 11 kids out of over 320 in that school meeting state math standards.
Yeah, and that's like the proficiency level of math at that grade.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, 11% of like are hitting like A's or whatever. This is like the basic level of proficiency.
Yeah, and you said percent there, 11 students.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it truly is a shocking statistic, especially when you keep in mind that in the 2022-2023 school year, 3.42% of Lincoln students met state math standards. the district average was 43%. So they are performing 40% below the district average. And English scores are similarly low, but not to that degree, right? So last year, about 23% of Lincoln students met state math standards, while about 54% of students district wide. So you look at these scores and you understand that these scores have decreased over the past 6-7 years since before the pandemic, which is not surprising. I mean, that happened across the district, across the country, really. But what hasn't decreased over that same period of time is graduation rates. And in fact, graduation rates have almost uniformly increased. You know, the one difference is that during the 2020-2021 school year, Lincoln's graduation rate was actually at its highest. It was at about 89%. And that was because for that school year, the district, like many throughout the state, decreased graduation requirements, decreased the minimum GPA required, decreased the number of credits needed, and then went back to previous standards, which caused the graduation rate to drop a bit, but it's steadily increased since then. And so while test scores have decreased from the 2016 to 2017 school year to now, the graduation rate has increased from about 77% to about 85%. And what's kind of the most shocking thing here is while on metrics like math test scores, Lincoln is performing 40% below.
40 percentage points. So it's 40 even percentage like more points, dramatic.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. 40 percentage points below the district. Its graduation rate is only about a point and a half below the district average.
Yeah. So you, I think, look at that and have a natural reaction. It was like, how can this be? How can they be graduating at the same rate as other folks when their proficiency level is so much worse? Mm-hmm. And that's not creating some kind of like moral panic about what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And if you are letting people graduate without minimum sort of, you know, accomplishment as far as understanding things, what are you actually doing?
Like, yeah.
How are we serving them? And their answers weren't very satisfying.
No, that's the most frustrating part about this story is that I set out to try and figure out why there's this total disconnect between these two things. And I feel like at the end of it, I still don't really know. And so that tells me that there's a lot more work to do that I plan on doing.
There were kind of two major responses, right? You got the principals, which had, there's co-principals of Lincoln High School, and they had a take. And then there's sort of the politician take.
Yeah. So school board members, Sharon Whitehurst Payne, whose sub-district includes Lincoln, and Richard Barrera, who is kind of the unofficial spokesperson for the school board, they both kind of poo-pooed test scores, right? And there is some truth to what they say in that test scores can often be biased. But again, it's one of the only kind of solid measuring sticks that we have. And so for them, you know, they say, there are more important things than test scores. You know, you got to look at the grades that kids are getting in high school. You got to look at how they're doing in college when they graduate, and you have to look at graduation rates.
You can even look though at readiness. There's a measurement for that, right?
There is, yeah. And Lincoln is underperforming even the state average, which is also below the district average. It's a whole other set of numbers that we don't have to get into right now. But you know, when you hear somebody tell you, don't look at those numbers, look at this other number like graduation rates that is conflicting with this other basic measuring stick, it's very confusing. Mm-hmm. So there was that. And the principals, who are just the latest in a long line of people who have kind of come into Lincoln with the district's sort of approval to try and help kids at a school that's long been struggling. They didn't provide a whole lot of insight, but one of the things that they did say that I think can probably explain some of what's happening here is that they're working hard with credit recovery programs. Now, what that means is, let's say I'm a junior and I'm going into my senior year and I've failed a couple classes, I've missed another one. Oftentimes, you know, school officials will work proactively to try and ensure that I get back into those classes that I may have failed, or take a summer school course to make up a class that I didn't take. And so I have no doubt that that's part of what's happening here, right? Some kids are maybe failing a class and catching up potentially a little bit. But again, the degree of disparity between Lincoln's scores and the district average says to me that that can't be making up for everything.
Yeah, I think it's pretty normal in these circumstances for the district to like dismiss bad test scores. That happens pretty regularly. And Barrera's was the most sort of vociferous version of that, the most full version of like, not only do they don't count or they don't measure things appropriately, they're actually biased and they shouldn't, these kids shouldn't be expected to do well on these tests, which is, you know, there's obviously a lot to debate about whether a math test is biased or not. But I think that what belies that, though, is that when there's good test scores in the district, they put out press releases.
They're the first ones to pat themselves on the back,
I just looked at one that San Diego Unified District students outperform peers in state, nation, and big city. When it's good or when things increase, they love it. They're happy to point to test scores. When the test scores go down, they're like, "Oh, those don't matter."
Yeah,
When
results aren't don't make them, you know, look good or feel good, then they have a million and one excuses for why they don't matter.
Yeah.
But when they do look good and feel good, hey, look at these test scores. We did so good on the tests.
Well, it was a great piece. I think one of the interesting parts was just how you introed it. You were at a meeting, right?
Yeah, I was at. I've been going to Lincoln Cluster meetings for a bit now. And I'd already sort of seen, you know, some of these numbers, but hadn't really figured out how to approach this. I went to a Lincoln Cluster meeting, and actually the co-principals of Lincoln were there to present data and information about the school. And for much of the meeting, they talked about kind of the programmatic changes that are happening there, whether it's community schools or transitioning from, I think I had included it in an earlier draft because it was just funny in how, you know, and how jargony it was. They were transitioning from a project-based learning approach to an inquiry-based learning approach, which is like, I have inquiries about what that means. But so they spend all of this time talking about this stuff, which is important. I mean, community schools approach could really help kids like Lincoln who are disproportionately, you know, socioeconomically disadvantaged. But at the same time, you know, they took forever on all of this information. And by the time, you know, they got to the data showing how kids were doing, they had just a couple minutes. And when they put on these slides of test scores, it was the tiniest little font you could ever imagine. I couldn't read anything from the back of the room, but speaking to someone else who attended, who was sitting right up front, neither could she. And she was kind of the person who really allowed me to understand how crazy that was, right? She was like, I've been to a lot of these presentations, and I've never seen somebody bring data that I literally could not read while sitting in the front row.
Sounds like they need help with their PowerPoints. I think we know a guy.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover Seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com.
Well, I've seen several proposals over the years of different ways that the governance at the San Diego Unified could change and how it could be improved. There was a proposal, like 15 years ago maybe, to add school board members who would be appointed by a group of experts in the community, university leaders, business leaders, and the mayor. And they would add, so there would be elected members of the school board, and then there would be these experts.
Huh.
And they would, you know, combine to run the school district. That didn't even get on the ballot. There was a scandal about why, but we won't get into that. and now there does seem to be some movement to change a different way how the governance of the school district works. So school board members, there's five for the city of San Diego, for the San Diego Unified.
Yeah,
but there's also
five elected by registered
voters. There's also student representatives. They get to sit up there and make comments, but they don't get to vote.
Yes. So San Diego Unified a couple years ago now, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, created a student board member position, and they've since updated and made some changes. Now they have two student board members, one of which has to come from a Title I school. And those student board members are elected by their peers. And recently, you know, a law was signed into law that paid those student board members. That's something they'd been pushing for. And so they're getting about $1,700 a month now to do that work, which, you know, bravo to them. And also college credit. But that doesn't really go far enough for some of them. What they really want is full voting rights. Right now they have preferential votes, which is basically like I suggest that you vote for this, right? It doesn't count towards the final vote tally at all. And that's been very frustrating to some of these student board members, one of whom was Zachary Patterson, who was the original student board member. And you know,
you might remember, if you're fans of the podcast or of, you know, me, I had him on a couple of times during COVID.
Oh, nice. No way.
To talk about what it was like to be a high school student during that period.
Yeah, he's a really, really smart kid.
Oh, yeah,
he's now over
at
Duke. But, you know, I first started thinking about this when I did a piece a little while back about how over the past, I can't even remember how many, multiple years, San Diego Unified's board had voted unanimously in almost every single vote. And over those past couple of years, only one thing had not passed the board. And that was Zachary Patterson's resolution to support this law that would, among other things, have allowed student board members to vote. So it was very interesting, you know, that this, the one thing that didn't pass was this change to how the board would operate. And so now, you know, once they've, now that they've got over the hump of this getting paid thing, they really want to set their sights on trying to get a full vote. You know, it's interesting to see where the kind of lines in this battle have kind of fallen to. Richard Brera, for example, is super duper in favor of it. And at this recent meeting announcing that, you know, student board members would now be paid, he compared the disenfranchisement and the, you know, expectation that student board members would have to prove that they're competent to take part in this democratic process to, you know, the disenfranchisement of, you know, Black people and women in the past. I mean, he's very, very animatedly for this. Meanwhile, other board members who are still on the board, like Sabrina Bazo, flatly said they didn't think this was a good idea for a variety of reasons, including that, you know, potentially a student board member who goes to, let's say, Lincoln, for example, and the adult board member who represents Lincoln could potentially conspire to get undue influence for Lincoln's benefit. You know, again, just an example. Lots of strange reasons. But this seems to be the kind of the next place that student board members want progress to be made. And Zachary actually is still working on it. He founded a national organization that advises and supports student board members, and they're looking to make progress on this.
Yeah, I think I was saying earlier, I think that this would have been something that me as a student, I would have been like all about. Been like, give me rights! Yeah. My voice!
This would have been a student civil rights issue for you.
And now I'm approaching 50 and I'm like, get out of here, kids. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Were you into policy at that age?
No, oh. I was such a bad student, but I would have been good.
I don't even know what that means.
It would have been good if I had thought about being good.
How good you are at explaining things.
If it had occurred to me to try hard and really work on it, I would have. I should have. It just didn't occur to me that would be something to dedicate attention to, like succeeding and being part of it. I think this is like kind of a classic. You're not able to get a lot of solid answers. Richard Barrera is the, you call him the de facto spokesperson for the San Diego Unified School District. He's that way because he says things.
He's willing to say things definitively.
And he's for it, but you try to get a couple other people on the record and it's just a, it's, you got to slalom through some different takes.
So at this press event, you know, I tried to, there was Sharon Whitehurst Payne who had voted against this resolution to support that law a couple of years ago. And Richard, and I kind of tried to get both of them on the record to see if they would support this push to get voting rights now that kids were getting paid. And, you know, both Lamont and Richard interjected to basically say that, you know, the board is in favor of this, but I'm not speaking for all board members, which is just a funny, you know, exercise in logic.
You said Lamont, you meant Richard?
Lamont and Richard kind of both interjected.
So Lamont, right? You're talking about Lamont Jackson.
Lamont Jackson, superintendent of San Diego Unified. And you know, regardless of if the board gets on board with this, there are a lot of things to figure out.
Yeah.
I mean, the main argument for this is that students can't vote for their own board. At least the vast majority of students can't vote for their own board members because they're not 18.
Yeah.
So having people that they elect that can properly or more fully represent their voice on the board seems important to them. But there are technicalities like the fact that there are high school students who are 18.
I think the first thing that comes to my mind that would be concerned. Yeah, it's true. There are 18-year-olds who can vote.
So they may end up being double enfranchised in this.
But if
this
you're 1/6 of the leadership at that point, or 1/7 of the leadership at that point at the school board, you would be a very powerful person, and unions and contractors and labor groups and businesses and reformers and charter schools and others would be like very interested in helping your campaign.
Yeah.
And you'd immediately go from being a 16-year-old, 17-year-old to being a guy having to run and represent an actual like fully funded campaign, like that goes through to schools, and then the campaign materials that go to like students. There's a whole just
imagine
bevy
that,
of questions.
Imagine
to
that, like an ASB campaign that's supported by like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, like I know, and that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like the kind
of forget about the glitter posters, yeah.
The kind of misinformation, the TikTok, the snap. I mean, whoa! Like you're talking about a really strange world of grown up problems there, which is fine. Maybe that's what we want them to experience, but let's see how that goes.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's definitely there are big questions, not least of which is the fact that, you know, there needs to be a state law that would allow this.
Yeah.
First off, and secondly, that there would need to be a change to the city charter to allow this as well, because the board is chartered with you know the city. But I think it's an interesting thing to follow, and if it did pass, I would love to cover that first election.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast in San Diego, where we made predictions about the state of the city that were incorrect. I predicted that he would talk about tax increase and maybe break some news about a big development, but all he did was announce that he wanted to rename a street after Peter Seidler. No big breaking news about one of the big projects going forward in the city. It's the most popular public affairs podcast that made predictions about the state of the city that weren't true like that. If you have a question or comment for our podcast crew, you can send an email or voice message to our producer, Nate John. Send those to nate@vosd.org. That's nate@vosd.org. You want some mail, huh? Yeah. All right. Make him happy, guys. Your questions may be featured in a future episode. Sign up for our newsletters at vost.org/newsletters. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and editor chief at Voice San Diego. Andrea Lopez Villafañe is our managing editor. Jacob McQuinney is our education reporter. Nate John is our expert, excellent, and very nice, if sometimes direct, producer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.